Okay, let me officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with Ariane de Bonvoisin. My name is Mary Allen, and I am a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and your host of this Conversations with the Masters series. I want to first just welcome our live listeners, and especially some of you that may be new, people from Facebook, from Twitter, those that heard about this call through first30days.com website. And I also want to welcome anyone that may be listening to this as a recording at a future time. And I especially just want to thank you for continuing to really spread the word about these Conversations with the Masters calls. So today I've got Ariane here on the line with me. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Just to check, make sure you're on the right side of the fence here.
You got it.
And let me just tell our listeners a little bit about you, and you can even expand upon that. But just to let people know, you are the founder and CEO of first30days.com, and that's first30days.com. And this is an incredible website that really is about helping people through transitions of all kinds. And that's whether it's a health diagnosis, going green, moving to a new city, getting married. And you'll find over 50 life-changing subjects on this site. Ariane has a degree in economics and international relations from London School of Economics, and also an MBA from a small school known as Stanford University. Ariane worked at the Boston consulting firm and with media giants BMG, Sony, and Time Warner. This was all before she decided to really pursue her dream as it relates to first30days.com, and has been doing so since 2005. Ariane, I got to throw this in, an accomplished athlete. She's been a professional swimmer, a ski instructor, has also completed a series of marathons and triathlons, and even reached the summit at Mount Kilimanjaro in January 2001. And on another venture, oh my gosh, you are the adventurous one, accompanied a group of students to the Antarctica. Unbelievable.
Correct.
And just to sing a few more touts, recently named as up-and-comer to Silicon Alley's Insider annual list of most influential folks in New York digital business. She also has a monthly column in Redbook magazine, is a life balance expert for Health magazine, and will be contributing to Best Life magazine in 2008, so keep your eye out for those. And I actually remember, too, when you were featured in O Magazine, and, of course, there's a great clip, you being on the Today Show recently. So lots of great acknowledgments. And I also just have to say one of the things I love, Ariane, about your site is the Things I Love page. And there are many things that we have in common, including considerable time in the Tony Robbins environment. I, too, was a swimmer in high school. Fourth in state way back when, and I didn't realize you do Bikram yoga, also a passion of mine, and I'm a denim girl too.
Well, I love it.
Yes. So anyway, just a little bit about you there.
It's interesting, you know, I always hear these beautiful, extraordinary bios, and I think one day I'm going to give someone a bio to read of all the challenges, all the mistakes, all the times. Because it's exactly who I am as well. It's sort of a balance between those two things.
Right. Boy, and what a great point that is. But you are all these things as well. Well, so let's maybe just start on, you know, when did you know that you really wanted to take a stand for making change in the world?
It's a great first question. You know, when I was at Time Warner in this very big, significant, impressive job running a $500 million fund, I was 28 years old, I really had a very strong sort of inner microphone that kept waking me up first thing in the morning and trying to get my attention. And it kind of went like this. You've climbed the wrong ladder. It's leaning up against the wrong wall. This is not your journey. It's not your passion. It's not what you came here to do. and to sort of leave the sort of very prestigious external identity and sort of really, that voice didn't tell me what was next. It just told me that something was wrong, and it also told me that the guy I was with was wrong. So those two sort of major things that I thought were stable in my life were actually not. And it took me about 2 years to really give it permission to be right and to be the truth, because most often it is. And I left that big job and started traveling and started trying to find my soul and what it was that I wanted to do here. And while I was traveling, I noticed a few things. One is that every person I was meeting fit in one of these three categories. They either were struggling with a change, they were getting divorced, they were struggling with a diagnosis or an addiction. They secretly wanted to make a change, they wanted to change careers, they wanted to start a business, they wanted to move or go back to school, or they were helping a loved one through a change. And this change thing started just being very present around me, and I think once we create a little bit of space in our lives, we start becoming a lot more aware. And I think awareness is really the beginning of change. So I noticed not only was I hearing all these stories about change, that I started interviewing people and writing about it and just journaling about it, but I also realized that we all hate change. We resist it. We struggle with it. We don't know how to start. We're overwhelmed. And I just thought, isn't it interesting that change is the number one guaranteed thing in life? It's the one constant, always happens, where everyone's going to get our fair share of changes we initiate and changes life throws at us. And yet, we all find it so hard.
Right, and want to avoid it and put our head in the sand.
I thought, is there a way of creating a company and or a brand or a platform whose only mission is to make change easier, where millions of other people have lost a job, millions of other people have gone through a diagnosis, millions of other people have gotten divorced? Where is that life wisdom? Where are the experts? Where are the mistakes to avoid? And I came up really with the idea of the first 3 days really as a metaphor to help people get started, to initiate change in the right way, to avoid the pitfalls, to know what experts and information to trust, and to really be in a very optimistic, positive, hopeful environment, regardless of what the change was. So it certainly was a journey of listening to life, praying, meditating, asking for signs, writing, and just my question was, what should I do with my life? Why am I here? What's important? How can I serve? How can I make a difference? Those were really the more empowering questions that I kept asking. What's interesting is I didn't know what it was going to become. I didn't know if it was going to become a website with millions of people. I never knew I was going to write a book. What I knew was that what I was doing wasn't right. And eventually all those stories of people I met got into a book. And what I noticed was, and we certainly are going to talk about this today, what I noticed was that everyone I was meeting, you know, I went looking for what makes someone good at change. Why is it that you're good at change and someone else really struggles? Why is it that someone initiates a change and someone never initiates a change? Why is it that someone can go through a job loss and someone else and they will have radically different experiences? And what I found was there are really 9 commonalities, 9 principles that make someone good at change. And a lot of the times, a lot of the people on the call, I'm sure you follow some of these 9 principles already. They're just probably in a blind spot or in your unconscious. But when you realize that it is possible to make change easier, there are things that people do, think, say, feel, believe, who are good at change.
Well, and I love that you have organized it in the way that you have, particularly with exercises that it's not just about reading, about change, is really about then taking that and personalizing that for yourself.
It is, you know, one of the things I say is no one can make you change. That change muscle comes from within, and no one can strengthen that muscle for you. So it's really a journey that people take, you know, where they find that inner strength, they find the courage, they find the discipline, they find the commitment. And what other people can do is provide support and provide encouragement and provide guidance and provide information and especially inspiration. I think people don't change from information. I think people really change when they feel inspired and there's a stronger reason why the change needs to happen.
That's such a good point. Such a good point. So what have you found is the difference between people who successfully change versus those that just stay stressed or stuck?
Well, to touch upon some of the 9 principles, by far the number one principle that I heard and found and noticed was people who are good at change and successfully navigate change are optimists. They have positive beliefs. And even if you weren't born an optimist or you didn't think you grew up an optimist, you know, looking at the beliefs that are running who you are, your life, your identity is certainly something that you can change. It's probably your biggest need right now is to look at your beliefs about yourself. Like, what are you saying about yourself?
Mm.
Most of us are saying, I hate change and I'm bad at change.
Right, right.
That's the first place to start.
And I don't know what to do next.
Yeah. And the truth is, you know, you're much better at change than you've ever been told. You know, all of us, every single person on this call and listening has gone through dozens and dozens of life changes. You've just never seen them as changes, acknowledged yourself for having gotten through them, whether you've gotten through school, whether you've gotten a job, whether you've survived losing a loved one, whether you've moved, whether you've bought an apartment, whether you've gotten out of debt or lost weight. We are a walking combination of all the changes we've faced and initiated. So the belief of I'm bad at change or I'm any of those kind of beliefs we seriously need to look at because they do keep us trapped when we're looking to face another change. Another belief, you know, is, well, how do you see life? Is life on your side or is life against you? Are things fair or are things unfair? You know, Einstein said the most important decision you'll ever make in life is whether to believe you live in a friendly universe or an unfriendly universe. And he also suggested to throw out the words fair and unfair because, you know, and this is from one of the more intelligent men on the planet, not me.
Mm-hmm.
But really looking at, you know, if someone's going through a job loss or someone's going through a divorce, what are the beliefs that you hold around that? Is divorce the worst possible thing, or could divorce be a gift? Is a job loss, you know, a gift from life to get you closer to what you're here to experience, or is it something to, you know, run, hide, and be ashamed of? Very different beliefs.
Mm.
You know, following up from that, what I found was from all these changes that I heard, and some were truly tragic, people losing loved ones and fiancés in 9/11 and children and being raped, all the way to changes that, you know, we all wish we could make one day, there's something that kept on coming up, which is that the change guarantee states that from this change, from any change in any situation you either have to face or initiate, something good will come.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask that question to people all around the world, what good came from this change? And every single person could always answer that question. And I think being triggered, you know, for anyone going through a change now, writing that down, from this change, something good will come. If you truly can just hold on to that with every strength that you have and just know that there is something that will come from a change. It might not be in the area you think. So you might lose your job and something good might come in a relationship or it might come, you know, in a completely different area of your life. But something good always comes from a change.
Mm, and that's really the second key principle.
It is the second key principle in, you know, there's a lovely quote that says, hidden in any misfortune is good fortune. It comes from one of the oldest Chinese texts in the world, the Tao Te Ching, which is a 25-year-old text, you know, older than the Bible. And it's really about looking for what good might come from this, asking the question, what is the gift in this? What might I possibly learn from it? It's by far the most important belief to have. I have it written down. I have it, you know, in my bathroom. I have it by my phone. I have it at work. So that when something might trigger you and when you might be shaken or when something might happen that you didn't quite expect, you can immediately train your brain to kind of go, you know what? Something good will come from this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just
go back even on empowering beliefs. What are some of the other empowering beliefs to tap into during a time of change?
Anything to do with your personal ability. You know, I would say the number one thing to look at if you really want to change your life is look at what you say to yourself when you look at yourself in the mirror. It will either free you or trap you. So anything like, you know, I'm a strong, confident person. I believe life is on my side. I know that I can handle this. I know that I can handle anything that comes my way. I know that I am not alone. I know that there are people out there that I can ask and that can help me through anything I'm going through. Versus some very negative internal dialogue that a lot of us have. That's really the very first place to go to. I think depending on what the change is really looking at, you know, if it's a diagnosis, of looking at, well, what's the opportunity that could come through this? What's the learning? What's the gift? What's the faith I might be able to develop? What's the connection I might be able to develop with someone while I'm going through that? really looking at the beliefs that, you know, so many of our beliefs are not really ours. A lot of the beliefs that we're holding about a lot of life changes are beliefs that we've taken either from society or the tribe, as I call it.
Yes, I like that name.
You know, very tribal. So, you know, some people do not or wouldn't dream of get divorced more because of what the tribe has imposed upon us versus their own sort of courageous act of doing what they feel might be right for their life. Same thing with leaving the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
Strong beliefs about, well, that's what's safe, that's where we should be, versus taking time off or maybe starting a business or doing something that appears more risky. So really analyzing, you know, are these my beliefs or are they my parents? Are these my beliefs or are these beliefs that just women or men have adopted?
Well, and so it kind of raises the question, you know, if we notice that we've got some lousy beliefs, how can we really successfully change those?
Well, the first thing is really identifying them. So I would say, you know, get out a piece of paper and just identify your most dominant beliefs in three areas: about yourself,
mm-hmm.
about life,
mm-hmm.
and about whatever change it is that you're either facing or that you want to initiate. And just really look at sort of what's there and then start anything that does not serve you and anything that is not really true. I would eliminate and put a belief that you say is actually true. So instead of someone saying, you know, I'm bad at change, the right belief is I'm actually very good at change. I've gone through all of these changes. I've lost a parent. I've dealt with my kids leaving home. I got married. I've had children. I've managed to sustain, you know, a job or whatever it is for a amount of time. But writing what the truth is, you know,
right.
I think the most important thing with beliefs are is just not to believe everything we think.
Right.
Just because we think it doesn't mean it's true.
And very, you know, and so often we do believe, you know, we have a belief that we can believe opposites. It's, you know, I'm not good at change, but then we can really look at how we are good at change, as you
pointed out. The other thing I would say, too, is one of the things that's very linked to beliefs and limiting beliefs more specifically is our excuses. You know, we are driven by our excuses. And there are only probably a dozen or so excuses that hold us back. And I think having us identify what are our most dominant excuses for getting through a change or initiating a change, you know, some of them are, I'm too old, I'm too young, it's not my nature, it's going to upset someone, often a family member, it's going to be risky, it's going to be hard, it's going to take time, it's going to be expensive. You know, they're sort of only a certain basket of excuses. And I think really, you know, again, the awareness of, wow, there goes my excuse again.
Yep, and that's...
There goes
that's,
my excuse again.
That's
and
the point.
And just not allowing yourself, you know, I used to have a lot of excuses to why I'm still single. A lot of excuses,
mm.
you know. And they started with, well, I live in New York City, and there's no good men in New York City, et cetera, et cetera. I could take a whole call on my excuses
mm.
on that area. And I just made a commitment to not have those excuses run that area of my life anymore.
So
things are definitely changing in that area of my
life. Oh, very good. I was going to say, what are the new beliefs? There might be some people here wanting to borrow some of those new beliefs.
Yes. You know, a lot of them are about, you know, there's some extraordinary men in New York City. And, you know, it's not about putting the excuse out there. And it's nothing external that's holding you back. It's much more something internal that you're either allowing or disallowing.
Right.
So taking more control over it, where it's not only something that's happening on the outside.
Mm. So good. Well, so let's. I wanted to ask this, too. You know, it kind of relates to being a change optimist, but how was it that I read in the book that your parents' divorce actually had something to do with turning you into a change optimist?
Yep, it did actually.
And there might be some people going, what?
Yeah, you know, to me, I saw my parents getting divorced. It was obviously a very painful time, and it was before, certainly when they weren't sure they were getting divorced. But the optimism that came from that was really what helped me nail this whole concept of the change guarantee and what helped me see it in so many thousands of other people that I've encountered since, which is, I went asking the question, what good came from my parents' divorce?
Mm.
And the list is endless in terms of the relationship that I developed with my father, the depth of relationships that have developed between, you know, my brothers and I, what my mom has, you know, gone on to become. My mom was depressed. My mom was severely overweight. Within 5 years, she and I ran the New York City Marathon. She lost 65 pounds. She took care of orphan kids. She started a children's museum. I mean, it's extraordinary. My father, you know, he and I went sort of on holiday together for the first time. We'd never done that together. He's calmer. He's in a better relationship. He's an extraordinary grandfather. You know, my brothers, it's, I mean, it's endless, the good that came from that. And it's not anything that we tried to make happen. It really was just allowing life to have that change happen, as hard as it was for the family at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I always go looking for, well, what was possible because of this difficult change? And it's a great question to ask. What was possible because I didn't get into my first college of choice?
Right.
What was possible because my first boyfriend broke up with me?
So great. Still keeps coming back to what good can come from this.
Yes. Yep.
Well, let's move on to principle number 3. Talk about the change muscle. What is the change muscle, and what is this principle number 3 about?
The change muscle is something that you're born with. When you think about it, the first 9 months of your life, you go through the most amount of change that you'll probably ever go through. And you do that at the level of your DNA. It's not something your mom's controlling or making happen. Your mom's not waking up at month 4 going, oops, I forgot to give you a nose. You know, there's none of that involved. It's just change is something that is within us, and it's part of us. And it's something that we forget as we sort of grow up. It's something that we think we need to, you know, feels if it's not something that we're good at. And the principle specifically says that people who are good at change know that they are resilient, strong, and capable of getting through anything.
Mm-hmm.
What I would add to that is, you know, everyone, you're much stronger, much smarter, and much more intuitive than you've ever been told. You're much, much more powerful. When you really truly believe that, and we stop underestimating ourselves, and we stop thinking that we're weak and powerless, you know, the very best of the human spirit comes out through tough times. It is not through stable times. It's through really times of crisis, times of change. You know, I think it was Emerson that said, you know, it's in man's transitions that he is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in man's sort of regular life where everything's going great. That's really where you see the essence of, you know, a man or a woman. So the change muscle, once you kind of get back in touch with that and go, you know what, there is a part of me that has always found a way to survive anything, even the hardest thing you can imagine or the hardest thing that has happened, your change muscle has a memory. There's a part of you that remembers every single change you've struggled with, made, failed at so far, and also succeeded at, and you haven't given yourself, you know, some high fives for.
Right.
So when that change muscle has a memory and you can activate it, you can kind of look back. You know, one of the exercises I encourage people to do, this is also in the book, is to really create a change resume. Take a piece of paper out and go, this is not your professional resume.
This is your change resume.
This is the core of who you are as a human being. It is not what you do, and it's not how people see you. It is, you know what, I got through a miscarriage. You know what, I stopped smoking. And I went back to school later on. And I bought a home with my first savings. Everything. And don't only think about the external changes you've made. A lot of the best changes we make are internal changes. I forgave my father.
Mm.
I got back in touch with this person even though, you know, we were estranged or hurt. I started being kind on myself. I started, you know, creating a routine of doing Bikram yoga, whatever it was. But things that are not only external where you can validate, but also some of those internal changes where you know that you are a different person today. And then look at that change resume and really look at, well, what helped me get through those changes?
Mm.
There's only a certain amount of things that will help you get through changes. And what you'll realize is today, when you're facing a change or initiating a change, the tools that you need to use are not that different, and you're not that different. And the memory of how you get through change is not that different. So even though the change today might be something you've never faced, if you're someone that goes to a support team, faith and prayer, you know, writing things down and journaling, or just knowing that time is going to heal things, whatever it is that consistently has gotten you through other changes, that's also going to be a big part of what you bring to the change today. The other last point I'd say about the change muscle is there's sort of a stacking effect that happens. When you see all the changes you've been through, you know, the muscle gets stronger and stronger and stronger as you bring more changes in your life. I know for me, I grew up in 6 countries, went to 7 schools.
Wow.
I've had too many relationships. I've had, you know, 10 jobs before the age of 32, 33. I've been fat, I've been thin, I've had money, I've had no money. You know, and it's just this change thing becomes much more of who you are, and it's much more of what life is calling you to be, which is, you know, life is change. It was JFK said, change is the law of life. And I truly believe, and it's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this work and getting it out to people, is I really think getting good at change is the most important life skill.
Boy.
And I think for any parents on this and listening, you must teach your children about change.
Well,
about how and why things change. And it's not about stability, and it's not about protecting them from something that might change.
Right, exactly. Well, and it's so interesting that the biggest thing around developing your change muscles is to acknowledge what you've already done.
Yep.
Instead of it's almost like we, in many cases, can go through change, and it's like we pretend or we hit the delete button on those memories that we actually navigated that pretty well.
Yeah, and we're terrible as human beings. We just forget all these amazing things that we've done and been and helped other people through a change or been there for someone. And it's really time to just go, you know what, I'm just going to write a list and put it up somewhere visible. Put it up for yourself and just go, you know what, I'm the girl that got through losing her father or mother. I'm the girl or the guy who got through, you know, some terrible thing that might have happened in your childhood. I'm the person who had the courage to get in the gym or raise some money for charity or whatever it is, and that's really where that muscle gets strengthened.
Mm.
And it's waiting to be used. It's really waiting to be used. And when you use it, you start feeling really good about yourself, because it's a part in many of us that's underused.
And it makes change easier. So I want to invite everybody on the call to make a little note to yourself to create your own change resume after this call, to take inventory. Well, and let's move on to principle number 4. I'm looking forward to this one. It was a great chapter in the book about change demons. And tell us about principle number 4 and what these change demons are and how we can master them.
So the change demons are the sort of affectionate term that I use to describe all those negative emotions that get in the way when we're going through change. I actually wanted to put this chapter first, and my publisher was like, yeah, we're not going to start with that right from the start.
We've got to warm people up.
Yeah, we got to, you know, create some level of sort of optimism and hope and belief. There's probably an entire book just on these change demons. But while I was interviewing these few thousand people and just observing the million that are on our site now, I sort of found what the dominant emotions that get in the way when people are going through change. And some of these are very, you know, you'll spot them easily, and some are a little bit surprising. So the top 6 change emotions that will show up and that will hurt us and stall us are fear, doubt, impatience, blame, guilt, and shame.
Mm.
You know, to just touch upon each of those if you want me to.
Yeah, fear, well, and definitely the antidotes, which is my favorite part.
Yeah, you know, the thing with these emotions is they are not to be resisted. They are there to be felt. They're there to be named. They're there to be seen, so that, you know, a lot of us will do the blame thing, and we won't even realize we're doing the blame thing. So it's like, well, where does most of your blame energy go to? Is it self-blame? Is it blaming a next lover, a boss, the environment, the economy? Like, what is it? Like, who is getting that blame energy? And it's not about not necessarily not doing it. It's about going, wow, I'm really doing the blame thing a lot. And one of the things that I would say is these emotions are there to help you get back on course. So if you're not feeling great, or if one of these emotions is really catching your attention, they're really there to redirect you, that you also have complete permission to be human. And as Mary says, every one of these has sort of an antidote and something that is calling you to move towards, as opposed to getting stuck in that emotion. So fear, for example, the thing with fear is you can still keep driving the car and just put fear in the passenger seat. I know a lot of things I do still bring up an extraordinary amount of fear for me. And I hear, you know, people introducing me and this beautiful bio and background, and my heart's pounding, and my throat's dry, and I'm just like going, oh, my gosh, and the fear is still here. And I've been doing this for a little while now, and the fear is still there. So I've sort of stopped trying to get the fear away. I've just sort of gone to, well, what helps me get through it? And the antidote to fear is faith. And it could be faith in yourself. It can be faith in the other experiences you've had of doing this. It can be faith in knowing that, you know, God or something higher is going to speak through me. It can be faith in knowing that, you know, the gift I want is to help and to serve. It's not about me or looking good or sounding good, but it's really trying to find faith in something else. The doubt demon, you know, we doubt everything. We doubt ourselves. We doubt our friends. We doubt other people are going to be there for us. We doubt things are going to get better. We doubt that this is, you know, not going to be permanent. You know, whatever change it is, it's never going to change. And there's so much around, you know, looking back on so much that we've doubted and somehow things have worked out. So the antidote to doubt is really to surrender a lot more, and we'll talk about that in the next chapter where it's about accepting more, but really surrendering to what is and what will be, not needing to control, not needing to be driven by extreme certainty, but just knowing that, you know, I think it was Bernie Siegel that said, you know, it's totally okay to have doubts. Just don't feed them and don't entertain them. You know, okay. They're there. They're going to show up to the party.
Well,
they're just not the ones that need our full attention.
Well, and dancing back with surrendering to the good that is going to come from any change.
Yeah. And once that's really ingrained within you, there's just this knowledge of knowing that, you know, I can doubt all I want, but there's something bigger going on. There's a bigger plan here. The demon of impatience, this one's a big one for me personally, just wanting things fast. You know, we all so overestimate how much change is going to happen in, let's say, a couple of weeks or even a couple of months. And then we so underestimate how much change can happen in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. It's the number one reason so many of us fail at New Year's resolutions, because we give ourselves a month to get our change, pretty much. That's why it's called a New Year's resolution. You're not supposed to get a New Year's resolution in September, right? And because of that, we're so tough on ourselves, and we must extend the amount of time that we give ourselves to make a change. Yep. You know, it's taken me years to build this business. And I used to have shame around that because I thought I should build this in a year.
You know?
I had an MBA. A lot of people expected me to do it in a year. And yet, you know, every seed I planted counted. Every meeting, every phone call, everything has sort of developed in exactly the perfection that it needed to develop.
One of my mentors likes to say it usually takes four times longer to do what you think it's going to take.
Yeah. And it's really extend the runway. Give yourself more time. You know, the antidote to impatience is actually not patience. That would be too simple. The antidote to impatience is actually endurance. And it's knowing that you will need energy. It's going to take a little bit more time than you think. And it's about taking care of yourself as you go through that change, where time will do what it does.
Yeah.
The next demon is blame. Which is one that, you know, at least before Obama was elected, there was a tremendous amount of blame energy going on in the country, and I sort of see and notice it quite quickly in other people. One of the things I'll invite people to do is to do what I call a 24-hour no-blame day.
Oh, I love this.
24 hours, you're not allowed to blame anything, anyone, not the weather, not the traffic, not anything, and just realize how much energy we're leaking doing that.
Well, you know what, and I just have to chime in on that. As I was reading your book and came across that one, you know, I really was unconscious to even the little subtle blame that I would put out. And, you know, so taking on this 24-hour no-blame game was very, very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't consider myself somebody that goes around blaming here and there, but that's a very, very powerful exercise.
And the self-blame is the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, the self-blame really is the worst. And it's knowing one thing with a change that anyone might be struggling with now that involves other people. Very often change involves other people. And it's just knowing that blame never achieves anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't and it won't. And it will keep you stuck in a place of not growing and not moving forward. So if you're really, like, ready to change, that's one of the things that really needs to be let go of. And it doesn't mean that there's not, you know, hurt or sadness. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're condoning anything. It just means that you now deserve to change and you now deserve to get what's next for you.
Mm-hmm.
The antidote to blame is honesty.
Mm.
Not just honesty about what really is, what is the truth, what is your part in it, what is your part in wanting the change or resisting the change. And it's just putting yourself back in the picture as opposed to making it be about something or someone else.
Mm-hmm. So powerful. Well, then we have guilt. And
guilt is guilt. These next two are very big for women, guilt and shame.
Well, and you know, and I'm curious because you also say about guilt that there's, you know, like a way to, like, how do we use guilt to navigate change?
Guilt, you know, great quote as well, and I can't remember who said this, but guilt is really anger directed towards ourselves.
Mm.
So a lot of times we feel guilty that we haven't lost the weight or that we spoke to someone in a particular way or that we haven't left the job that we don't like or that we haven't, you know, read the books that we said that we would do. But we're just, this emotion of guilt is consistently going through us. And what it really is it's just part of that inner microphone that's trying to get our attention that something's off course.
Mm-hmm.
And to just know, you know, for all of these emotions is something that I call the change GPS. And just like you have a GPS in your car that's a navigator for your car, I truly believe you have a navigator inside of you that's constantly asking you two questions, and that's it. It's like a car GPS. Where are you now?
Where are you now?
And where do you want to get to?
Where do you want to get to?
And it doesn't say, well, what happened last year? And what did you do 3 months ago? And where did we go wrong 6 months ago? There's none of that. It's really about, well, where are you now and where do you want to get to? And there's no space for guilt. There's no space for you did the wrong thing or you didn't lose the weight last year or you didn't pursue the job, you know, whenever it was. It's all about being present and giving yourself the chance to start now.
Mm.
There's no space really for guilt when you ask those questions the way it is. Mm. It's a daily commitment.
So powerful. And so what's the antidote to guilt?
The antidote to guilt is forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
and it's forgiving yourself for whatever it is you're angry about or upset about, and the sooner you get to that place, the sooner you'll find a level of peace or freedom. So if you're feeling guilty about maybe initiating a divorce, it's, you know, forgiving yourself not only for having that thought, but also forgiving anything or anyone that's involved in it that might have caused hurt, and knowing that the quicker you move through that, the more blessing is going to come for everyone involved on the other side.
Mm-hmm. So true.
The last demon is shame.
Mm.
We have shames, but we are ashamed of changes that we've made, and we're also ashamed of changes that we still haven't yet made. You know, I used to have a real fear of public speaking, like a paralyzing fear of public speaking. And you know, a few of the times when I crashed and could not say three words in some very big and important, significant environments, I was very ashamed.
I've been there, too.
I just didn't think I would ever recover, basically. And, you know, to see what I've been able to do now and just sort of, you know, find a place where I can communicate more from a heart space than a head space. But for me to move through that specific scenario that I had a lot of shame, I really had to get to a place of being able to honor that experience and honor the fear I had around public speaking, honor the experiences I had had around public speaking, and honor them for the lessons that they are, for being able to share them today, for example, on this specific call, so that they can potentially maybe help someone else. But it's really going, you know what, this is just part of something that's happened in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not anything to push under the carpet, and it's not anything to put in the dark. But everything, even the stuff that you're like, I could never tell someone that this was me or has happened or something that I've done, the quicker you shine a light on that, the quicker you realize, you know, we all have things that we're ashamed of, things we've said, done, haven't said, haven't done. Mm. It's really coming to a place of honoring and going, this is absolutely who I am, it's part of who I am, and there's nothing to hide.
Which actually kind of dovetails really nicely into kind of the fifth principle, which is acceptance.
Yes.
You know, that certainly it sounds like with any of the change demons that one of the first things is to accept the change demon or the emotion that's popping up as a guiding force and not stuffing it or resisting it.
I'm a very big believer in giving people permission to be human. I think so many of us, myself included, you know, it's not okay to feel any of these things. And what I've really seen with a lot of people is, you know, it's the emotion that you most resist that is really ruling your life. So if you do not want to feel fear, you are not pursuing a lot of things because a lot of those changes are going to bring up fear. You know, if you do not want to be made a fool of, if you do not want to, you know, risk the potential of not being loved or seen as wonderful by a lot of people, there's a lot of things, again, you're not going to be doing or changing. So not only accepting the emotions that are coming through you and just going, wow, this emotion is really going through me. The principle around acceptance is the quicker that you accept whatever has changed in your life, the quicker you're going to be able to move through it. Resisting any change is not the answer.
Right.
So for us, you know, accepting that we've lost money in the market is a big one for people right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people who are good at change know that the quicker they accept the change, the less the pain and the less the hardship will be. And the quicker you'll move to action, the quicker you'll move to solutions, the quicker you'll move beyond, you know, the emotions of resistance.
Well, and a big key here is with acceptance, it doesn't mean we like or, you know, or love or prefer what just happened. But can you maybe draw the distinction between, it's like we don't like that the market came down.
Yeah, and but, I think, you know, Byron Katie, an author who I love, says this best. She goes, you know, she totally agrees with that. And she would say, yes, and when you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time.
Right.
So the reality is, you know, I've lost money. I know most of my friends and family have lost money. And I don't like it, and I struggle with it, and it brings up anxiety. And the more I meditate and just ask to find a place where I can accept this, the more I can move to, well, where else can I find money? What else can I do? Do I need to change anything about what or how I invest or how I save? But I can move beyond that. I think, you know, so many of us, when we get caught in acceptance, we have an idea of the way life should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should stay married, or we should be married by a certain age. We should have had kids by a certain age. We should, you know, have certain career highlights by the age of 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. And we have so many of these things. And so when these, they don't happen, we're surprised that we don't accept them because the sort of unconscious patterning has been ruling our life. And I think really, and again, this is one where I heard this over and over again, is let go of the way life should be. Mm-hmm. Life should not be a particular way at age 50, or life should not be a particular way because you're a woman and you're 35. Life is going to be what it's going to be for you, and you have a big role to play in that, but life also has a big role to play. You know, there's a quote here in the book that says, life always bats last. Always. Mm-hmm. You can get in the ring and you can put your boxing gloves on and you can fight life all you want. But life makes up the rules, and life's ultimately going to be the one that's going to decide in the end.
Right, right. Well, and I think another key around acceptance, it's like acceptance gets a bad rap too, because some people equate, if I accept, then that means I'm taking a passive role. And that means, you know, that I'm accepting this as it is and nothing else will change after that, which is sort of the paradox, right?
It is. And I think, to me, it's sort of the more you accept something that has an element beyond your control, the more you can get clear on the part that you can control. Like, mm-hmm. you can control, you know, your intention. You can control the direction of something that you might want to be or do or create. the thing that you need to let go of is when things happen and also how things happen. There's a part of, you know, the beauty and mystery of life that then interplay in those.
Which leads us to principle number 6, which is?
The things that you can control. When we're going through change, so many of us, you know, are like, well, change makes me feel out of control. Change makes me feel as if, you know, everything is changing and everything is moving. And that's certainly true, and that's what's happening on the outside. What the principle specifically says, people who successfully navigate change use empowering questions and words, they think better thoughts, and they express their feelings.
So give us some examples of how we can use empowering questions and language to get unstuck and so forth.
So the questions, to me, were really a highlight when I was interviewing people, because I would say, you know, what were the questions you were asking when you were going through X change or whatever change I was asking them about? And there was a real distinction between people who were really struggling and people who were actually moving through change. People who were struggling asked these kinds of questions. Why did this happen to me? How can I have been so stupid or crazy or blind? How long is this going to last? Am I ever going to be happy again? Will this ever end? How did God let this happen to me? Those are a change pessimist questions, and they will lead you in a certain direction of change. Someone who is a change optimist, as I call them, will ask these kind of questions. What could be great about this change? How can this change possibly help or serve, or what is the gift in this change? What action can I take? What has not changed? Who can help me through this change? What can I still be grateful for that hasn't changed in my life? Can I find some humor in this? That was another big one. People always try some way to sort of look at it with some lightness to it. Here's another great question. Could this change be protecting me from something?
Oh.
Sometimes we don't get the change we want because we're actually being protected from something. Same thing with words as well. You know, people who are good at change do not use words like, this was a disastrous day. This was the worst day of my life. It's a tragedy that I've lost my job. Those words are very, very harsh on yourself emotionally, mentally, intellectually. And it's just very important to be mindful of the language that you're feeding yourself. And you're also feeding it to other people, because when you're describing a change or describing something else that's going on, you know, people are very aware of the language that you're using.
Boy, it's so true. One of my favorite questions is what can I appreciate about the situation?
Yeah, great one too. Awesome. You know, and the real quick as well on the expressing your feelings, people who are good at change are not worried about talking about their feelings, expressing their feelings, and even grieving. You know, the best way to grieve a change.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. What is the best way to
the best way to deal with grief and to grieve a change is to grieve and to let it take as long as it needs to take. A lot of us avoid the grief and try and change. We try and take action and we try and get through it. And we try and, you know, and we can get through it through food or TV or alcohol or something else. And the reality is, if you really want to get through change, you need to stand in the middle of that grief and let it completely wash over you.
You know, and I think this is true no matter how big or small that change is. I mean, obviously, a change like death, you know, most people associate with grief. But even there is a little grief in going from being single to married. They're sort of grieving the singlehood. And I had read a book at the time I was getting married just to really acknowledge that, you know, even if it's not like we have to dwell in it for a long time. But
a very good point, and I talk about this in the book, where every change involves loss, including changes that you've always dreamed of.
Exactly.
You know, you get engaged, and then you're like, why am I feeling a little sad? You move cross-country to be with someone you loved, and you're like, well, this doesn't feel so good. You have a baby, and you're like, why am I feeling a little sad? There's always a sense of loss in every and any change, and knowing that it's going to happen, and it's probably something you're going to feel and eventually sort of, you know, walk through. Already just knowing it makes it a lot easier, because you kind of go, okay, here it is. I understand why going from being single to being in a relationship, there's something that I've lost. And there's also something that you've gained.
Right. I think that's just so important to acknowledge. Well, so then let's look at principle number 7 here, which is about meeting your spiritual side. Tell us what the change principle is here.
The principle here is people who successfully navigate change know that they're connected to something bigger than themselves. So when everything around you is changing, it's really looking for that part of you that doesn't change. And it's a part inside of us that's calm and it's centered and it's guided and it really does know what to do. But it takes retreating from the external drama, which is familiar to us and in some ways is much more comfortable for us, than actually coming back to a place inside that's quiet and peaceful and also involves being silent, which is quite nerve-wracking for a lot of people. So many times we go looking for our answers on the outside, and we ask every single person we can find, and we never really ask ourselves, how do I really feel? What do I really want? What's really going on here? And that part of you, if you believe in something greater or not, that part of you, that intuition, that instinct, is always trying to get your attention because it does know the truth, and it is always trying to get you back on track. Every person I interviewed believed in something greater. They didn't all believe in the same thing. You know, every athlete, every hero, every politician has always acknowledged some sort of greater force going on. And it's really creating the space for that to be given a microphone. It's, you know, it's what I call staying connected to that part of yourself, staying connected to a part that is constantly trying to put you back on track, as I know it was for me, getting me out of a relationship and getting me out of that job at the time. It's, you know, it is through prayer. It is through even just being out in nature. It's coming back inside the body as opposed to just inside of our head. It's about feeling what is really going on more. So many times we avoid that sort of bigger connection because we don't want to face the truth. We don't, because a lot of the times the truth is uncomfortable. You know, Gloria Steinem says the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And that's true.
Well, so let's take an example. Somebody's navigating a change, and they feel all of a sudden disconnected from that spiritual side or their higher self. So walk us through how somebody might consciously reconnect to their that spirit voice, that inner voice.
I would say the spirit voice speaks in times of silence. It does not speak in times of crisis and drama and chatting at the bar with five friends who are, you know, basically just hearing your story over and over. That's not when it's trying to communicate with you. It's always there, and it will always, if you address it, it will always answer you. To me, I would create either a space where you live, or you could do this in your car as long as it's silent, you don't have music going on, but giving yourself even 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day and just ask a question and then just wait. And, you know, some of the times intuition speaks in words. I find a lot of the times intuition speaks through your body much more. So what's going on in your body? Are you eating more? Are you drinking more? Are you going for the coffee or the alcohol? Are you sleeping more? Are you tense before you make a decision? If you want to buy a home and you're not sleeping and it's strange and your stomach's off, and that's your intuition. It might not be telling it, you know, your mind might be going, it's a great deal, it's a great house, it's great money. And your body is trying to get your attention through a different way. So intuition really will talk through, you know, sometimes clearly through words, but very often your body will never lie.
So really coming back to the body and listening, and I agree. I couldn't agree more, making time for silence. I have a much harder time hearing my inner guidance when I'm moving at 5,000 miles an hour.
Yeah. And, you know, the beauty of coming back inside, which is really what this principle is about, and the beauty of taking time to create space, create silence, is about having your inner world and outer world be in sync. And so many times, you know, if we're unhappy, it's because our inner and outer worlds are not synchronized. You know something's wrong, and yet externally you're behaving or acting in a certain way. And when those two are aligned, life is so much more peaceful.
so true. In fact, actually, right before this call, I put a question out on Twitter of, you know, what people's questions were about change. And somebody said, how can we ensure change is consistent with our core beliefs? And actually, you just answered it there. It's like when we really listen to that inner guidance, we'll stay on track.
Yeah. When that inner voice and your outer voice are saying the same things, that's really when change sustains itself. I mean, for me, for the first time, you know, my intuitive inner voice is very aligned with what I'm now doing with my life. Thank God.
Well, you're setting a great example for a lot of people. Well, so we've got about 4 minutes, but let's quickly touch on the last two principles, and we'll have given actually all 9 principles in this call.
Sure.
So principle number 8 is about your change support team.
Yes.
What's the first step in building a change support team?
The thing with your support team is people who are good at change are not alone.
Mm.
So this whole concept of I'm alone, I'm the only one going through this, no one has ever felt this bad before, no one has ever gone through these 3 changes at once, is a lie, basically. That's your liar talking to you.
Mm.
Every person that I've met who got through a change can always point to a person or a group of people who helped them. And our biggest flaw as human beings is that we keep thinking that we're alone and we've got to go through things alone. There's always, always someone who can help. So the thing with the change support team, you know, in the short time that we have, is really realizing that your change support team is not necessarily your friends and family. A lot of the times they're not up for you changing. It's threatening to see you change. So it's really looking at, well, who's on your team?
Mm.
And again, this is another question I would have, you know, people answer in their spare time. Who really believes you can change, wants you to change, is going to hold the light for you to change, is going to have a high standard for you changing, is not going to let you slip back? You know, who are those people? And then literally I would go ask them. I would specifically ask them, you know, for what you need help with and ask them to keep you to that standard and give them full permission.
Mm.
But just knowing that they're not necessarily the 3, 4, 5 people you're spending the most amount of time with. Otherwise, the change you really want might already have happened.
Right. Well, and what's your recommendation for people on your team that are not as supportive?
I would say, you know what, keep them as friends, but they are not your go-to change team. When
mm-hmm.
you are trying to change your finances, you go to a couple of different people. When you're trying to change your weight, your physical appearance, you go to people who might have already gotten through that change, but who have no sort of preconceived notions of whether you've failed 3 times before or whether you've tried or never tried before.
Mm.
Very different types of people. And you'll know that there are people that make you feel good about yourself. There are people who are like consistent optimists about you, and they probably see you better than you probably already see yourself.
So true. The great, great input there. So principle number 9?
Principle number 9 is about taking action and getting unstuck. You know, there's a reason why this is at the back of the book. A lot of the times people are like, tell me what to do. That's usually the first thing I hear when people are going through change. And the reality is with any change, the emotions are hard and the actions are easy.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions of, you know, quitting smoking are really hard. The action is really difficult. The action is really easy. The, you know, losing weight, the actions of losing weight are very easy. It's the emotions that are hard. So the thing about, you know, principle number 9 is people who do get through changes, they do take action. They're not all about just sort of sitting and observing. They have a plan. They can make decisions, even though they start small. You know, the journey of 1,000 miles starts just with a single step. So it is about creating some forward momentum. Big thing about taking action that I found, which was really a revelation to me, is people who are good at change really know how to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many of us take care of everyone else, but when you're going through change, there's a few things that are immediately going out the window. Sleep goes out the window. Eating well goes out the window. Exercising or staying healthy goes out the window. And then we just start drinking everything except water.
Right.
And that's the very foundation that we need to go back to. It's what I call the seed of change. And just sort of going, you know, if you do not know what to do and you're listening to this, you must go back to those 4 things. You must sleep, you must eat well, you must do some sort of physical exercise. Our bodies are trying to process. You know, there's so much mental, intellectual, emotional energy going through you. If you are not moving physically, you're going to explode.
Right.
You are full of these emotions when you're going through change, and you must give your body a way of actually moving through it. But taking care of your health is by far the first step when you're going through any change, a super fun, exciting change like getting married or a really difficult change like losing a loved one. Be kind and take care of yourself.
So good. Well, and also this key around taking action is really one of the keys to navigating stuck points, too.
It is.
You want to say something about that? You know, if you're in the middle of a change, you know, what do people do when you get to that stuck place?
I think when you get to the stuck place, you go back to two things. One is you remember why it's important for you to move through this change, because that's what's ultimately going to get you through it. You know, if a woman's getting married in 3 months, she has a very strong reason why she wants to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to really connect with, well, what's my reason why this is important? And so getting back to that, I think knowing as well that whatever change you're going through, you're either a warning for people or you're an example for people.
Mm.
And this world really needs more examples. We need a lot more examples of what's possible versus what's difficult. You look at someone like Obama, you know, the great thing about him is he so redefined how we see change. It's not something we feared during this election. It's actually something we wanted. You know, he redefined not being allowed to be run by excuses. I mean, he had thousands of excuses. It's going to be hard. I've never done this. I'm too young. I'm not experienced. And it's not okay for us to be in that place of stuckness and still having those excuses take up so much space. I think he's really created an example, as opposed to a warning, of what is now possible in a world, a country, an individual, a human being that's free of excuses.
Well, and I would say he's certainly supported your campaign for launching your book this year. It's like, hello, he's definitely got people thinking change, which, now people can, if they want to embrace change in their own personal life.
Very true. You know, on our website, first30days.com, we've had a lot of people go, we fully support this, and isn't this great, and has Obama read your book? And
right.
We have gotten him a copy of the book, actually, which has been great.
I put that up as a tweet a few times on Twitter that, after he won the election, I think he needs the first 30 days for what to do, first 30 days of presidency.
Yeah. We'll probably get something done for him. And, we'll probably ask a lot of people that are on the site to chime in about what the issues are and should be, and we'll get it to him. So we'd love everyone to participate.
Absolutely. Well, since we're actually just a minute or two over here, let's just wrap up. But I'd love to invite people, I guess, two main things. First off, to get a copy of your book, The First 30 Days. I love this book. I actually just finished it, actually this morning. I had the last two pages this morning. Love this book. And get a copy. It's beautiful, gorgeous, lots of exercise. Don't just read the book. Do the exercises. But then also, you want to talk a little bit about your website and I love the little courses that you have relating to specific changes.
You know, one thing I'll say, too, with the book is, if you're listening to this call, I'm sure you know a friend or a loved one or a colleague or someone that might be going through change. It's just, as the holidays come up, it's a great gift as well. It's what I call giving the gift of change to people.
Oh, yes.
I've heard a lot of comments about people giving it to someone, and they get testimonials. They truly touch my heart. Getting someone out of an abusive relationship, just something that people can do. So the website has 60 changes now in career and finance, relationships, home, family, technology, even new directions. So really covering all the top changes that we found people have most asked us for. We have over 400 experts. Everything's free. We've interviewed a lot of people who've gone through these changes, asked them the questions, trying to help other people who will be coming through these changes after them. There's a few things on the side. Everything is organized in a way where it's simple and it's optimistic and you don't need sort of any particular skills to get through it. There's a couple of things. One is what we call the everyday change tip, which is sort of like this daily little change email that we send out to people just keep everyone on track. And it could be in a specific life change that you tell us about that you're going through. So let's say you want to pursue a dream. We'll send you an email every single day and we'll handhold you through that. Or it could be, I'm just, open to making small changes in my life. And it'll be a combination of the very best that we have sort of across the site.
Mm.
I also host a show weekly on Fridays called Change Nation, where I interview some of the, you know, top experts and celebrities and authors, a little bit like this wonderful, wonderful program that you're doing here with Conversations with Masters.
Thank you.
And it's on every Friday. I know we did Jenny McCarthy last week on the first 3 days of having an autistic child. But we've done them on, you know, financial things that have happened recently. So I really invite people to go listen to some of those. You can download them, listen to them. But it's a lovely environment. We have a little over a million people currently right now on the site. So if you have a question, there's certainly someone there that can help or might be able to have some piece of advice.
Wow, wow. Well, I may need to talk to you about being added as an inner
as
peace
an expert.
Yes.
Yes, that would be lovely.
That would be awesome, super awesome. Well, I know that we've delivered a lot of great information. I hope people are getting excited and shifting their own mindsets around change. Lots of resources here. And let's, you know what, any final words for our listeners before I'm going to just open up the lines and you'll probably get a round of thank yous here in a moment.
You know what, I would just say there's a way to obviously contact us as well on the site. You know, contact Ariane at first30days.com is the best way to get in touch with me. And, you know, we make sure that everyone hears from us. It'll either be from me or from someone on the team. But, you know, you're not alone, and I acknowledge you for taking an hour out of your day and actually trusting Mary, trusting me to be able to share just a little bit of our content and our journeys.
Well, thank you so much for taking an hour of your day, being here, and making another fantastic Conversations with the Masters call. I'm going to open up the lines, and the lines are open, and you guys can thank Ariane in person.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was unbelievable.
And thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great.
Hey, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Ariane. Bye-bye.
Thank you.